So, does anyone have something from yesterday? A question or something that you kind of digested and would like to say? Or from today? I'd like to share with you part of a teaching that's recorded from Gautam Buddha. Talking about us and what happens when we start to get kind of, we accept that in this life we want something a little different. We're ready to rearrange our life to a certain extent around that wish to live differently or deeply. We at least notice if we say something out of place, nasty, whatever. We notice. We wish we hadn't said it. And we even give some time to meditation, whether regularly or on retreats, in ways that people don't call meditation and in ways that people do call meditation. So we're living that kind of spiritual life. It's visible. And we're doing our best. And still, as someone said recently, it's so noticeable the difference between when we're at our best and when we're at our norm, not even our worst. When we're on retreat, for example, and when we are home. Or even on retreat, the moments that we feel kind of nearly divine, or where we feel at ease and ordinary and simple, and then the moments that we're enraged about something really stupid. Which happens. It would be easy to sort of give up on ourselves, to blame ourselves. And it can be kind of comforting to know that this is what happens and has happened for thousands of years. Is that even when we're doing our best, and we've actually already done our best for a while, even, the while might be a week or it might be 20 years. We're trying to be aware of our behavior. We're trying to act with love. We're trying to let meditation kind of suck us deep. And still, the mind gets wobbly. The heart and mind get wobbly and go off. In this one teaching of the Buddha that I want to read part of today, he's talking to someone who is actually a teacher of many others, and who wants to know, he see this the listener sees some difference in what's going on around the Buddha and wants to know what's going on there. And the listener is interested in living in a completely peaceful, pleasant world. That's what he thinks is the most important thing. And instead of the Buddha saying, "You're crazy," the Buddha says, "Yes, it's possible. There is a completely pleasant world. And there's also a way to get there. It's not just that you happen to land in it or not. The way to get there starts by letting your life arrange itself around your deepest wish. Starting to let your language arrange itself around your deepest wish. And starting to let meditation take place. And not just the formal meditation that someone taught you to do, but the meditation you knew from a child, from your childhood. And doing that, you should expect, it will happen, that the mind will go completely crazy. Sometimes. And it could be enough to stop us, to make us give up, to think that we're the bad apple. Something's wrong with us. But if we could just know that this is how it is, that it, built into the mind, there are places that it's wobbly. And that wobbliness, do you know what that word means? Wobbly. So, let's say if the wheel of a car were wobbly, then the car would wobble. So if the mind is wobbly, then we wobble. And it doesn't just wobble us superficially, it weakens wisdom, is the way the Buddha puts it. And if we could just take that as such a simple situation, the such simple situation that it is, it so happens that for whatever reason or no reason, there are these places in the mind that are wobbly. And as we start to have more energy through resting and meditation and being more in alignment with what's true for us, the wobbles start to show, sometimes more dramatically than ever before. And so we think we're getting worse, getting more angry and more greedy and more restless and more doubtful. More guilt-ridden, etc. But this is normal and is not the end of any story. What I've actually found is that these wobbles come up just as there is enough energy to go deeper, and something in us is going deeper, and we're maybe coming into contact with new areas that we haven't known before. Places of tenderness, places where there might be a wound, or just places of power that are human. It makes sense that as some kind of energy starts to gather, that wherever there's a weakness or wobble, it's going to show itself. So I actually like to call these different experiences or states of mind or whatever signs of breakthrough. Signs of breakthrough means signs that we walk by. We don't stay there. So can we accept that if we're going into our meditation, there's going to come an experience of lack that feels so deep that it feels like the depth of who we are? Somewhere we even tend to believe that that is what we are, that is our deepest place, that feeling of not enough. And especially when we don't just take it kind of as an impersonal experience. Ah, there's an experience of lack. We seem to think that we should hide it. And in the movement of hiding the feeling of not enough, we're lost, and it's going to be very wobbly. When we're in a place of feeling not enough or feeling lack, what's the word in French? Moi. Manque. That's good in French, monk, because isn't it the same as like missing someone or missing something? We can recognize it by comparing and competitiveness, which is hard to recognize if you're putting yourself down. It's hard to admit that you're being competitive, even when you think that you're always going to lose. To accept the mind is competing, comparing and competing. It's coming from a place of lack, and that's normal, but not true. Then it's kind of easygoing. If we accept that it's normal, but not true, this lack, then it's kind of easygoing to feel simply the feeling of lack, not as a problem, as a human experience. As we start to feel tenderness for that place that feels lack, which can take time because it's very defended, but when we start to feel tenderness towards it and in it, we see each other so differently. We can see how easily the place of lack comes and starts to operate in us and really drive us. And in this piece that the Buddha spoke, it's like a poetry. I'm guessing that when he really spoke it, it was like a poetry. The way it's come down is a bit stiff. But he says that that experience of lack is like if we are in debt, if we've taken a loan, so we've borrowed money from someone. That's this experience of lack. I think it's such a cool image because it's not really obvious. We would have thought the experience of lack would be, I couldn't even get a loan. I needed money and I couldn't even get a loan. But he's saying, possibly, we may also feel a place of lack that is as if I've taken a loan that I don't know how to pay back. So there can easily come this feeling of pretending without really meaning to pretend. We feel that something's not quite the same as me, as all those other people who are so together or whatever. I'm a little bit different. I'm more wobbly than they are. And so the fact that they seem to treat me as a normal person, it's like having a loan. My sense of that I'm allowed to be here is based on that they accept me, instead of being based on a sense of belonging already. Does that make sense? So, the Buddha says, suppose we were to take a loan and start a business, and our business were to succeed. So this is what it feels like when we leave the place of lack, or we have so much tenderness, rather, for the place of lack, as a simple human experience. It doesn't mean anything about me. That isn't worth being ashamed of is the main thing. And I don't connect so often to the place of lack. And I connect more and more often to a source of richness in myself, in my own experience, that doesn't depend on someone else, on your confirmation. Some people may have a different game. They want to get your rejection so that they can feel that they exist. But it's more or less the same as confirmation that I exist. Most of us prefer confirmation. I love, first of all, that a guy who's just wearing robes that are made from trash, that they find in the trash and put it together and wear it as a robe. That his example is, well, it's like you take a loan and you start a business and your business does well. Right? For me, it's funny because I can't really imagine starting a business and all of that. So not only do we start a business and it goes well, there's enough for ourselves and there's enough for more than ourselves. There's enough for a family. And isn't that what it feels like? When we let go of the shame that I'm not quite right, something's not quite right, not quite the same. And we just let it be, okay, so maybe I'm not the same. I'm the one who's different. And then it turns out that everyone else is also different. And that in the difference is so good. And in the difference is so shared. And then letting go of bothering about how different I am, finally, as well. There's just this kind of goodness, and it's more than enough. There's more than enough. I would recommend this. I would recommend that this be a main practice during the day. Noticing when the feeling of lack is dominant. Noticing if there's shame about that you think you are lack or lacking. And finding ways to unplug from that and plug in somewhere else. So not necessarily tackling that. Not necessarily like having a fight with it. Sometimes that might need to happen, but it might be like 1 out of 100 times or 1,000 that we just have to have a face-off with the lack monster or lack and guilt. It's more the guilt, really. Mostly just noticing and kind of breathing out. Maybe this is normal. Maybe not. Either way, here it is. What else is there in this life that I can be sure of right now? That I'm not going to be pretending that there is some hope. There is green. There is blue. There is hot. There is breeze. There is weight. There is a deep wish. And there is experience of living that deep wish that you can feel again. So we have so much practice at being miserable. We have so much practice. We have a lot of facility and we're very skillful at suffering. And it's strangely, in a strange way, encouraged. It's not encouraged, really, to feel love and joy and peace. It's not actually encouraged because it's kind of dangerous when we're feeling that there is more than enough. When we feel love, we're not dominated by something. And so we just need to practice. If we could not be surprised that we can just barely feel joy and love, acceptance, belonging, we can barely feel a trace of it, or we feel it really strongly sometimes. It could be unsurprising. It could be unsurprising when something challenging happens and you know for yourself how small that something could be. Someone looks at you and it looks like a not friendly look. Or you just trip on the step or whatever. That if anyone else would do it, it's not a big deal. But when it happens to you, it can be a big deal. It can turn on all of our good practice at suffering. So I would like to ask that you play with leaning towards 80% of your day is leaning towards feeling the very faint, the whisper of maybe I belong, or maybe love is possible. Maybe I am loved. And finding words and ways for 80% of your day, at least, to be in that direction. And if you just remember how simple it is, in any moment in your life where you are feeling so strongly lack, not good enough, etc., comparing, competing, etc., and then either someone said something to you and said, what? What do you mean? And you realize it was complete fantasy. It was completely made up that you were lacking. Or maybe it was so much suffering to feel so small and so lacking that it just broke. And then even if I'm lacking, still here I am by the river. And there's a sky and a ground. And it's good. Or any other way that you felt a contrast between, let's say, believing lack and falling into not lack. Falling into a source of income, a source of richness that's not borrowed from somewhere. The Buddha says, I find it very humorous. Sometimes I think he has a really great sense of humor that has been, I think, they try to hide it a little bit as they passed it down over the centuries. And sometimes the way it's passed down, so straight-faced, I find very funny. So imagine that you had a big loan and then you made a business and the business is doing so well that you not only have enough for your own food, but you have enough for others to support people. Then on considering this, you would be glad and full of joy. So if we just remember again that lack is something that starts out by being kind of built into our mind. And when there starts to be more energy in your person through resting and meditation and alignment with what's important to you, there starts to be more energy. And that starts to show you the wobble of lack. And you know how simple it's the feeling of debt of I owe someone and the feeling of I have more than enough. We could even try it now with the most, let's say the floor, the most simple thing. By feeling the floor if you're a more feeling person, or by looking at the floor if you're more of a looking person. If you're a listening person, sorry, I don't know if you'll hear much if you put your ear to the floor. Just being with the floor through feeling or seeing. and letting the idea of floor go away, the idea that I should now be getting something special from the floor to go off. Until the floor is just able to be itself. With what we like and don't like about the floor. Beyond that, it's still itself. And if we could just feel that, I know it sounds really ridiculous, crazy, but the not needing something from the floor. I don't need it to be specially interesting or beautiful. I don't need it to be different or better or. It has a scratch across it. It has a memory of trees. So in case it happens for you now, sometimes just in the meeting, there's a noticeable change in the way you see the colors or feel the sensations. They tend to be softer and more vivid, more kind of three-dimensional. So that's one kind of shift that you could play with anytime, with anything. The second kind of wobble that the Buddha speaks out of, we might be able to think of 12, but he talks of 5. The second kind of wobble that will become available has already shown itself. It's translated here as ill will. Which I really like that phrase, ill will. So let's start with ill will. If we think of as if we'd never heard the word, or if it would be in another language, ill will. So the will, some kind of will that could be neutral. The will could be a neutral thing. I could be willing. It could be goodwill, it could be good intention, it could be willing to help. It could just be the possibility to follow through on something. Or kind of potential power, potential action. And for me, the ill will, I just get the sense of it's just out of alignment. The will, the possibility of action is out of alignment. Our power in potential is not staying true. So here the phrase is ill will and hatred. On retreat, sometimes we get a glimpse, a flash of hatred out of context, like suddenly you just hate bread or grass or something kind of really surprising to you. And so you get a chance to just experience hatred, which really is wonderful, because normally a hatred would be more something very cultivated, like cultural hatred, like. Could be interesting to think about breakfast, because I've noticed that breakfast is one meal that is very different in different cultures. So to think about your response to breakfast, or what you think breakfast should be, and what you might hate for breakfast, just to get a flash of what hatred might be. So that we don't relate even to mind states by memory so much, but more like fresh. Not so much through our idea. Sometimes if we hear the word hatred, it's so taboo that we think, oh, well, we're not allowed to feel that, so we don't. And then when it comes, oh, it's even worse. Hatred for me, I find to be a very thin layer of protection, an attempt to have a thin, strong layer of protection. So defensiveness, that's for me what I, when I chew the word hatred, that's what I taste. So I'm curious what you would find when you notice any flash of ill will, or maybe it's not only a flash sometimes, of ill will and or hatred. To feel if there's something like too much tenderness, tenderness that we think we can't handle, or we've been taught is too much tenderness for this world, and then a defensive reaction. But you will have noticed that when there is ill will and hatred, through no wish of our own, sometimes it comes. When there is ill will and hatred, the world responds. And we're more likely to trip and so on. I love the description of someone who feels like a friend whom I never met. It's a Frenchman named Jacques Lucéron. I hope you've heard of him if you're from this country. And he became blind at the age of 8. And he talked about in an accident. And he talks about being able to see. He learned how to see without his eyes, which is marvelous. But when he took the world as an enemy, then there was a hard time finding the lock with the key. There was a hard time finding the door. And it was easy to bump into the furniture. And we don't need to be physically blind to know what that's like. So the Buddha compares this to being sick and the food doesn't agree with us and we feel weak. I love this metaphor as well because it's exactly when there's this ill will and hatred. It's such a powerful feeling that when we're on the receiving end of it, we are very aware of the other person's power. But when we're in it, we feel weak. Often, we may feel also the force of the ill will and hatred. We ourselves are left without energy. So later, when we would recover and our food would agree with us and we would have strength again, then on considering this, we would be glad and full of joy. So I wish for us to consider not just how good it is to be free of ill will and hatred, how good it is to be relieved of lack. But to consider the possibility that the place of lack, the experience of deep lack, a belief that we are lacking. It's not even really, I think belief is too weak. It's an experience that I am not enough. Or an experience that I need to defend. That I cannot stay connected and be safe. There needs to be, I need to be out of alignment to protect. That's the ill will. If we could consider these as the real debt and the real illness. The ones worth resolving. So just, again, remembering moments where, from your side, you felt insecure and defensive. From someone else's side, they felt overpowered, criticized, or controlled, or whatever. But what starts to happen from the inside is that nourishment does not come in, because I'm keeping everything out. So when we notice ourselves getting into that tangle, again, instead of necessarily a direct conflict with this negativity, with conflicting mind, if we can find something else that's also happening, that's also alive. So again, we have green and we have blue, and we have breath, we have a deep wish, we have feet. And we also start to have some things that we know are joyful for us. Like I mentioned yesterday, the guitar in the closet. So sometimes if we let ourselves feel how terrible it is to be locked into ill will, to be locked into misalignment and defensiveness, if we let ourselves feel that it is painful, and that maybe that pain tells us something. Not that there's something wrong with me, but that there could be another way. And the compassion, it's not quite my compassion for me, though that will do, but it's almost more like life compassion is allowed to move when I feel the painful as painful, when I feel the misalignment as painful, when I feel the lack of nourishment as painful, when I feel the place of lack as painful. I just let it be painful, not problem, but painful. And life compassion moves and maybe suggests, how about a swim or whatever? How about a song or something that not just soothes you temporarily, but it meets you. It meets you kind of on that other side, the 80% side. It's interesting that the Buddha even throws in a line about not just abandoning ill will and hatred, but in the abandoning of it, he mentions compassion. Compassionate for the welfare of all beings. That's what happens. It's not that we try to use that as a weapon against ill will, but what happens when we find that the protection is worse than the tenderness? There happens to be compassion for the welfare of all beings, including this one. Are there questions or comments?
Something really true in that. And then somebody told me there was like this image of a swan who can, if you put milk and water together, let's say in a glass, and then it's impossible for us to separate the milk from the water, just one white blue thing, but a swan can actually separate the milk from the water. And how, in this hatred or anger and defensiveness, like how can you, there is a truth in there that it's not coming from nowhere. It's not, there is something in yourself that needs to change, or somebody else might need to change this behavior or behaviors.
Yeah. So good. Great. Yeah. There is a way for humans to separate milk and water on the stove. And it's not only meant as a joke, but sometimes it takes a lot of heat. So first knowing that water and milk have been mixed together, and this is, it's an Indian mythological bird, this swan hunts, that eats pearls and can sip the milk out of the milky water. If we can take the heat of the reactive wall that comes down and says, get out of my space or whatever, or that's not okay, that's not allowed. If I can take the heat but not take it as, not take the heat as correct, but interesting, then it can help me find what I need to learn. Where I may have been not allowed to respond properly in a moment where I did need to say no is the most common thing I can think of now. And this is much more commonly a woman's experience. It's not only exclusively women's, but many women have this experience where there also the anger has been turned in on ourselves. So first it's unwinding that, feeling the anger, and then not feeling justified that because I couldn't feel anger for 20 years, now I can, therefore, get out of my way. I'm always right if I'm angry. But there is an intelligence in the anger often that's not in the heat. It's not in the reactivity. But because the natural response of protection that may come, that we can relearn, is broken or disallowed, needs to be allowed, relearned, or whatever. Yeah. That's often in us. So it's great that you remind me this whole other area of working with emotion. I'm not actually talking, I haven't mentioned much about working with the emotion, but leaving the emotion aside, connecting to something else, so that we're expanding our ability to feel other things. But sometimes there's still 20% where we need to be skillful in riding that horse so that people don't get hurt, including ourselves. And one way is that it's not to assume that we need to reject it, because the Buddha said how great it is to get rid of it. Not to assume I need to get rid of it because the Buddha said how great it is. The Buddha said, so we'll be so glad when we're rid of this, when we're finished with ill will. But to stay with the real intention to be finished with it, recovering the pearl, recovering the milk. It's interesting that it's milk, something about a kind of nurturing quality. Recovering a nurturing quality, I often call it the mother bear. So the mother bear response can be immediate, can be no, can be yes, can be I'm going to eat you right now, whatever. But it's not blocking nourishment. It is aliveness in motion. So thank you for bringing that in. Great. It's not that the heat is right, it's not that the heat is wrong, and sometimes it's just feeling the heat. Anger often has a heat to it. And sometimes if we can, to the best of our ability, really just feel the energy in the body as not right, not wrong. Ahe. Then it happens by itself. We don't have to try to find the milk. The milk is left and the water is gone. It's almost like it boils itself off. And what's important stays. Okay, good. Let's have a few minutes silence together. May we be glad and full of joy, devoting our lives to tending the source of richness that's more than enough in us. May we be glad and full of joy, receiving what is more nourishing than food, letting our alignment stay true. To what makes life worth living. May our gathering together and our willingness to go deep contribute to a momentum towards liberation everywhere.